Chapter 12. Anna. Jim Thomas was almost finished mending his fishnet when the old Indian man and woman came down the path from Isaac's house. They walked fast and passed him without words or thanks, pushed their small cedar canoe into the light surf, and turned it about, heading north. They were out of sight within a few minutes, and Jim thought nothing more of it as he gathered up his thread and netting. Only a few days were left to get into the water before the cold November swells would be too big to fight. 3 miles from the beach, out of sight of the small settlement, the Indian couple turned shoreward and found a quiet cove, not dissimilar from the one Isaac had settled. There they met up with a medium-sized war canoe, 10 warriors, and Anna. The old man and woman beached the canoe, stripped off the long pants and shirts, and reclaimed their jerkins and furs. Anna and the warriors intently watched the old man, Klixawatan, the clan shaman, who seemed in no hurry to impart news. Then the old woman, his remaining wife, started to chant, and Klixawatan began a song and did a small 5-step dance. They were singing to the raven god for a new special strength. And then all the warriors knew they had found the big Tai. A few minutes later, the sun dipped below the Olympic Mountains, casting a red hue onto the water. Anna knew the omen was good. Blood on the water. Over the next 5 hours, they chanted quietly to a clan song led by Klixawatan. Moon bird running quick, bringing back the day and all our children. Water giving moon a second life. When the half moon showed itself, Anna and 4 of the warriors stripped naked and painted themselves with bear grease and red ochre from head to their ankles. They pulled the ornaments from their labrets, wet their knives on beach stones, rechecked their powder, and then pushed off southward in the larger canoe. The cold would keep them alert. They did not sing any of their clan songs en route. Instead, each warrior had his own private song that he hummed to himself, synchronized by Klixawatan, who tapped the side of the canoe with each dip of his oar. Anna had moved into a trance during this part of the journey, and while he paddled, the ugly events of the past year rushed past him. Forging the coalition with other tribes had proven more difficult than he had anticipated, partly because so many of them also had been devastated by the smallpox scourge, but also because under his leadership, his own clan's predatory actions over the past 10 years had diminished the number of Aboriginal tribes willing to deal with him. In the grand wake of events, with incoming settlers, aggressive actions of the British and U.S. governments, inventions and addicting conveniences that had to be assimilated, and new diseases that had to be endured, Aboriginal groups were suffering and desperately reeling throughout the entire Northwest. Anna also felt alone, as he never had when he was younger. Over the previous 12 months, with the loss of so many companions and then Little Raven, his past and the map it provided had been torn away from him. With the deaths of so many of his children, it was as if his horizon had disintegrated as well. He thought of this as he beat his syncopated rhythm against the side of the canoe. He knew that each warrior in the canoe carried the same burden. He would regain all of the hope for future bounty that rightfully belonged to them and snatch happiness back from the white intruders who had stolen it so viciously. He would cleanse away the shame. Anna had never been afraid of death because it was always around him from the time he was a small child. Instead, he played with it as if it were a curious friend that hid behind every living thing and showed itself when he called it forth, when Anna cut into the flesh hard and deep enough. Over the years, he had killed enough men, women, and children to know the measure well. And understanding that his special friendship with death made him an exception to all other men with a privilege that had to be revered and honored, he had attempted to visit death several times on his own, off away from where there was movement or noise, deep in the forest, away from the interference of other spirits. Knowing he could only really speak with death if he offered himself, he beckoned to it with his own blood and starvation. It always ended with him alone, the conversation incomplete. But each time he understood more. On a few traumatic occasions, he had been impulsively driven there, as when he had received Little Raven's wrecked body, and when he beheld the charred bodies of his children in the smoking remains of his burnt-out village. In his grief, he had run as fast as he could into the forest, hoping to catch death, knowing that in so doing he might look one more time at the spirits of his loved ones. But he was never fast enough. As a compliment to his companionship with death, in a lesson he learned on many journeys with Little Raven, he always had the comfort of others like him who understood. The ferocity of their every action was a language that endured and resonated universally with all creatures. All that followed him understood this. By their clan's actions, they defined and marked out their close proximity to death and their status as its favorite companion. His actions in a fight and those of the few who were privileged to learn from him were direct, immediate, and instinctively centered on an opponent's most vulnerable weakness. He knew his foes would invariably expose it by their protective actions, and then Anna would immediately counter with a vicious decisiveness. Anyone who tarried to think, aim, or react was simply swept away. The deliberating actions of the whites were cumbersome compared to his own instinctive tactics, so none of his lumbering opponents ever survived. Such was the ability of Anna, who lived with death as an ally. They reached Isaac and Emmy's beach as the moon reached its zenith, darting in and out from a cobweb of blue-black clouds. They pulled the canoe far up the beach because the tide was coming in and left Klixuatan to guard it and protect their passage away from this Tai's magic. Each man draped himself with an otterskin knucksack, and carrying their rifles, clubs, and knives, moved up the beach to the pathway that Klixuatan had indicated led the way to Isaac's home. It took 10 minutes to traverse the pathway onto the plateau. Isaac's home was first, prominently perched, looking over the entire plain from a short, cresting, north-facing hillock. In the moonlight, intermittently revealing the harvest stubble of the manicured land, several cabins were visible in the distance, but no lantern light or fires. As they drew closer, a dog began to bark from behind a white picket fence. Closer still, and then a light came on inside the house, and a tall, powerfully built man came out onto the porch. Anna knew it was the Tai he had come to kill.